Jewelry Design Center is not your average jewelry store. And Brian Toon, the owner in Missoula at 2501 Brook Street, and his team can make any and every type of custom jewelry you might desire.
The fun part is figuring out what makes people tick and what their drive is. See, nobody needs what we have. No one needs it. It does not keep your lights on. It does not keep you warm at night. But it's a funny thing. We have this emotional attachment. The reasons that we wear these things. These are a celebration of our life, a celebration of a relationship. They all are super meaningful, and then it gets handed down. You have these important times in people's life where it's such an attachment, then they enjoy it.
At Jewelry Design Center, they can make anything you desire. So come experience the largest full-service jewelry store in the Northwest with unmatched artisanship, craftsmanship, unique creativity, and care. Jewelry Design Center, your jeweler for life.
Yo, yo, what's up, everybody? Big Sky Breakdown, SkylineSportsMT.com. Appreciate you for tuning in. We have been pretty basketball heavy around here lately, but now basketball's over. Across the board, national championship in the books for both men and women. So just NBA left, so time to talk some spring football. We got spring games coming up each of the next 2 weeks, April 12th, that's a Friday, at Washington Grizzly Stadium. The Grizz conclude their spring ball session for 2024. And then on Saturday, April 20th, Bobcats will conduct Sunny Holland Classic spring game in Bozeman. So we're going to talk all things Grizz and Bobcats here in this Big Sky Breakdown. Brooks Nuanez joining me, Coulter Nuanez. And we'll get it started with a question that we actually asked on Nuanez Now on Monday. And of course, we ended up spending like 20 minutes talking about one thing, so didn't get to hardly any of our other topics. So we'll have some pretty common themes between this podcast and Andrew Houghton and my conversations on Nuanez Now. Figure we started off with this just because one of our fine sponsors here at the Big Sky Breakdown is Holloway and Hulling Law. Holloway and Hulling Law love to fight for the underdog. It's been awesome to be partnered with them for this spring sports season. Nate Holloway, one of the lawyers there, Holloway and Hulling, he is not only an ace criminal defense attorney, but also a big-time Grizz fan. And I actually got him hooked on the Big Sky Breakdown podcast last year because we started talking about Kialili Ayat. He just thinks this guy is just going to be the next great one. More than just Ayat, though, Brooks, it's been an interesting saga when it comes to the Grizz quarterback position because, of course, Clifton McDowell leaves. Now there's all these rumors that he might be trying to come back. He might be trying to walk on. No new news there on this end, but McDowell aside, because even if McDowell does come back, he's going to not probably be in the quarterback mix for a while. But you do have three other guys battling for the quarterback job. Ayat was the guy that I think really turned some heads last year. You and I both talked about him. You were at the Northern Colorado game. You were very impressed by just the raw talent that he was able to display. That said, he hasn't really done anything in big-time situations or big-time games, so we don't really know. The other two guys, Sam Vidlak, I thought got scapegoated a little bit last year because he was the starting quarterback when the Grizz had their catastrophic loss to Northern Arizona, which then proved to be their only loss of the regular season. But Vidlak's still around. He's still in the mix. And then they brought in a transfer in Logan Fife, who by all accounts has a really strong arm, but still quite a ways away when it comes to learning the offense. So just break down this quarterback deal. I mean, I think that it's a pretty obvious situation. I think you got to go all in on Ayat. But as we know, Bobby Houck's obsessed with quarterback battles, so that's not going to be what's happening. They're going to have a quarterback battle that involves at least three and maybe even five guys all the way until what? At least mid-September like they did last year. So where are we at with the Grizz? I guess the main question is why not Ayat?
Why not Ayat? Put it on a t-shirt.
Right? Let's put it on a billboard.
You got to roll with Ayat, right? I mean, that's just...
That's what I'm saying.
I mean, I think that's low-hanging fruit, but also like shoot for the stars, man. This guy has so much juice in so many different ways.
Right.
I mean, there's guys that have speed. There's guys that have arm talent. There's guys that have charisma. He's kind of has all that stuff.
What did you say last year? He's the first quarterback since who? Probably Andrew Sell that's not either a Willow or a Piston.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
They've either had Brady Gustafson or Jordan Johnson and Dalton Snead. They haven't had like a normal 6'2 and a half, 195 pound quarterback. So yeah. It's probably like, I mean, even Andrew Sell's a little bit shorter than that. Like a guy that can actually move and run. There's been a guy that looks like this physically. I know we only have a small sample size, but since our good friend Cole Berquist.
Absolutely. And he's not going to be like a magician on the edge. He's not going to necessarily just be a quarterback that runs the football. He's going to be a pocket passer, but you can be dynamic and be within the pocket. You can also, you know, extend plays outside the pocket, but not downfield with your legs. So I think that that ability to kind of have a mobile pocket with a guy who can be electric and can create plays, I think he's got to be the leader in the clubhouse. As you mentioned, Coulter, Bobby Houck's always been obsessed with quarterback competition. Why not? Create competition everywhere, right? It's the way that you find the diamond in the rough at safety. It's the way that you get guys like, let's say, who? Ryder Meyer to start.
Right.
Unless you create a competition, that guy will never have a chance. If he's just, he's younger and has a smaller scholarship, that's not how you should judge any of this stuff. So I think that by doing that to the quarterback position, you create a culture on the team of complete and utter competition. But at some point, you've heard me throughout the last decade be somewhat critical of not anointing a quarterback and not having a quarterback-driven system, because we all know how important the position is.
Right.
I think it's held them back at times, especially in Bobby Houck's second tenure. I think that's just the facts. I don't think that's really my opinion. At times, when the quarterback thing is rolling, the Grizz are unstoppable. And at times, it has held them back a little bit. When you get a good guy, you get a dynamic leader, that's one thing. Does Ayotte have those kind of intangibles? I think that's probably the part that's yet to be seen.
That's right.
You know, that's the part that he'll have to prove. Obviously, in the room, within the team. I saw a group of, 10 guys out at the University of Montana golf course having a fun time hitting the range. A bunch of good players. Some good swings out there. But Ayotte was one of them. So it's nice to see that camaraderie. He obviously has a connection with some of his teammates. And, that stuff builds. It takes time. But I think that he's got to be the leader in the clubhouse, Coulter. There's a little whip to it. Ball spins how it's supposed to. Those things, there are parts of it you can't teach that he has.
For sure. And again, even though we've only seen him in certain situations against teams that they were just beating down, I mean, they just killed Northern Colorado last year. So when he's in the game, you're up 35-0 or whatever, but he still threw a dime to Junior Bergen for a touchdown. I mean,
it's a good ball. Even if he takes his lumps in the non-conference, when they get Northern Colorado at home again, or whoever that may be, Idaho, whoever it is that comes in here that is not prepared in a warm October, early October game, his star will rise like unseen heights.
Well, that's the thing. Andrew and I were talking about this yesterday. When Montana State, behind the scenes, made the move to go with Tommy Mellott over Matt McKay, and then Matt McKay said, "I'm out, see you later," hit the portal, and then Mellott's the guy. The first three quarters of that first start against Tennessee Martin in Bozeman, Mellott looked terrible. He's throwing the ball all over the place. He's throwing in the stands. Then he had the zone read keeper where, boom, he scores a 77-yard touchdown, and he morphs into Superman. Then he dominates that whole fourth quarter, and then the next week against Sam Houston State, he looks like the second coming of who? I don't even know. Like, unbelievable. He straight up won the game in the first quarter against the defending national champions on the road.
Maybe a little Johnny Manziel or something?
I mean, he went absolutely bananas. They scored 28 points in 10 minutes, and he was like completely out of his mind. So you never know what happens when it clicks. That's the other point I made. So let me run this by you. During the Frisco era, since the national championship game moved from Chattanooga to Frisco.
7 years.
I think it's even been more than 10.
Really?
Yeah, because I think like those all the NDSU championships have been in Frisco.
So 2010.
Eastern Washington's championship in 2010 was in Frisco.
I think that was
the first year. Mm-hmm. But since Eastern Washington won the championship, we've seen almost annually either freshman or sophomore quarterbacks in that game.
Hmm.
Brock Jensen, Carson Wentz, Easton Stick, Trey Lance, and Cam Miller all were starters at North Dakota State by the time they were freshmen, and then they all became 3 or 4 year starters. I guess Wentz was the outlier, actually. He didn't start till he was a sophomore because Brock Jensen just happened to be ahead of him. But pretty much all those guys were four-year starters. Eric Berrier, true sophomore when he led him to the national championship. Tommy Mellott, freshman when he led him to the national championship. So Mark Gronowski went to Frisco twice during his freshman year because he got to have two because of the spring-fall thing. I guess that's not true. He got hurt that next fall. But regardless, his spring first season as a starter in the Natty. So basically, everybody that's been in the national championship game except Montana has been in this situation. So is that just another example? Andrew made a good point. He said, it really just comes down to, is Ayotte as good as those guys? Like, can he handle it? All those guys have this special mental makeup where they can handle the pressure of – we know Ayotte can throw the ball and play quarterback. Can he handle the pressure of being the man? That's what sets guys like Easton Stick and Mark Gronowski and Eric Berrier apart.
He kind of has the cool, calm, and collected thing. He seems like a pretty cool cat. that's not always what Bobby Houck loves. You know, that's just maybe a like a internal or a secondary observation. He likes a little bit more of the commander, you know. So, you know, maybe that style doesn't fit exactly what they want as a team right away, but I still think you roll with it. But again, as you mentioned, Coulter, it's going to be a competition. Might as well let it be. Last year during fall camp, when we were standing there, I'm not going to lie, like I was making fun of a guy that looked like Clifton McDowell. Oh, it is Clifton McDowell. Oh, yeah, he's the fifth string guy. You know, goes undefeated and run on the way to a natty. Right. So while competition's good, again, I think that anointing someone at quarterback earlier than not is important, especially in the summertime when these guys got to do all their player run practices and who's the guy, you know. Sometimes that it all works itself out just naturally, you know, internally amongst the players. But if there's a competition and Ayotte's meant to win it, I think you roll with him day one. And even if he takes his lumps, I think that you have a good conference schedule and you let it rip.
We'll see where they go. I think there's a lot of different options at quarterback for the Grizz for you to have pretty similar floors. I think there's only one option for quarterback, given what's currently on the roster, that gives you the ceiling, that is the ceiling that Montana needs to get to if they're actually going to win the national championship.
Tell me this. How important is the legacy of the Ayotte name to the fans?
How important is the you mean like he'll get more grace because of who he is?
Correct.
Or he's getting more hype because of who he is? Correct.
Like, how important is that factor? How relevant, rather, is
that? Such a good question, because it's like you could actually extrapolate that about an entire conversation about how many Grizz fans are old school Grizz fans or are new to the table, right? Like, how many people have been there since 1996 when sophomore Brian Ayotte was leading the Grizz to the national championship game?
I think even if you weren't there and you joined in 2004, you still have a connection to the Ayotte legacy.
For sure. On the flip side, because of the way quarterbacks have gone at Montana, like the only real true like quarterback legend in Montana history is one guy. It's Dave Dickinson.
Definitely.
We think of all the other guys like Brian Ayotte and Drew Miller and John Edwards and Cole Burquist and Jordan Johnson and all these guys. But like really people think about 100 Grizz besides Dave Dickinson when they think about all the great Grizz.
Yes.
So much of that is the guy that's been the head coach for the longest time in program history in Bobby Houck, which brings us back full circle. So.
I think it's important to have some familiarity as a fan as far as grace, number one, sure, but also just that buy-in factor. There's a little lack. You don't have as much question when you have this somewhat familiarity with not only just the name, but just maybe the style. Or I think it's obviously it's relevant.
Big Shot Breakdown presented by Holloway and Hulling Law. At Holloway and Hulling, they combine their passion for justice with a deep understanding of Montana law. With over 25 years of cumulative experience, their team offers expert legal representation in criminal defense, personal injury, and family law. They're not just lawyers, they are your advocates in the courtroom and beyond. They're a team of legal professionals united by the common goal of providing exceptional legal representation to the people of Montana. If you go online, montanalawyers.net, you can see some of their accomplishments. They've had more than 2,000 successful trial wins, which is an impressive and almost unprecedented number. You can find them, montanalawyers.net, or 406-508-5248. That's 508-5248. Hulling and Hulling, your advocates for justice.
I think what distinguishes our firm is collectively our experience. I think that's really important. Nathan and I both have handled hundreds and hundreds of criminal cases. We work on our large cases together. It's not like a situation where you hire a law firm, you hire the owner or the partner, and then you're going to have someone else handling all the actual reviewing the evidence and going through things. I mean, we take personal responsibility for all of our clients, and we work together on a lot of them to try and get good results. And I also think that it is a result-oriented business to a degree, and we get good results. If you're ever, you know, interviewing lawyers or trying to figure out who to hire, call us. We can show it to you. We can prove what we've done for our clients in the past and what we'll continue to do for them in the future.
Another thing you can do is you can go to our website and you can look at our recent cases and the results that we've gotten in those cases. And also in a little over 12 months, we've gotten almost 60 Google reviews. And I think people can go there and see what our past clients have thought of us.
Okay, let's jump to the cat side of things when it comes to quarterbacks. A couple questions for you. First of all, the Cats have new offensive coordinator in Tyler Walker. It's an internal promotion, as we've seen, not just in the short time that Brent Vegan's been the head coach, but also just in the long term. If you're from that NDSU coaching tree, one of the reasons why it hasn't really mattered what coaches, whether they're head coaches or coordinators or position coaches, move on, the reason they've had so much continuity is they've run the same stuff. Like, it's been the same thing at NDSU, offensive and defensive systems, with some nuances that are implemented, but mostly the same, you know, DNA, both sides of the ball, for 20 years, like, since before they even became the power that they've been. I think that's what Brent Vegan wants to do as well. Like, we've already seen, this will be his third defensive coordinator in 3 years. I guess 4 years. Third DC in 4 years. The system looked pretty much the same to me. A couple different emphases in terms of, you know, Willie Mack Garza is more of a DBs guy, so they had a couple different things on the back end, but like mostly it's a 4-2-5 with a power nickel, and that's just how you're going to roll. Offensively, they want to run the damn ball. That's what they do. They have a quarterback to do it. But how much do you think that impacts Tommy Mellott coming into his senior year? Because this will be the first time he's had a new play caller offensively. He now has a quarterback's coach that's different than that as well, and Chucky Keaton. Is this a plus? Is this a minus? What do we think of Mellott having sort of new leadership within his rooms coming into his final year as the starter at MSU?
It seems like the hires that Brent Vegan has made and what you mentioned about North Dakota State, but what Montana State has the feel for is it's not about what I want to do. It's about what we want to do.
Right.
That's a offensive coordinator thing. Like when you saw maybe Courtney Messingham come in, it was what I want to do, what Messingham does.
Right. And then that didn't really mesh with what Jeff Choate wanted to do.
Sure.
Sure. That's where you have this calamity of offense for a while.
I think, and of course, there's, you know, plenty of autonomy here. We're talking about like true high-level professionals that are bringing so many ideas to the table. But I think during the hiring process and then during the season that Brent Vegan implements a top-down system that they're doing on both sides of the ball what he wants to do, which in turn becomes we. You need to teach this. You need to be a part of this. But here's what we as a team want to do. I think it'll stay very similar. I don't see why, how it couldn't, especially if you have someone who, by all accounts, is a pretty smart guy and Tommy Mellott. You're going to have someone that, hey, Tommy, what are you comfortable with? What do you like to get to? What are the things that you see that we could change? But also, what makes you, you know, what makes you go? What makes you comfortable in the pocket? What makes you, what are plays that you like to get to that you think are, you know, plus advantage plays? Especially as a guy who's been there for a long time now, you'll see some of that start to trickle into a little bit of their DNA. Will you see some new wrinkles? Of course, everyone comes up with a good idea. You know, I loved when there's been coaches the last 3 or 4 years, Coulter, that talk about at press conferences on Mondays or Tuesdays or something, they say, yeah, that play that was, you know, we ran that 50-yard touchdown, pretty cool. We saw the Patriots run that. We saw right. Someone, and they're like talking about, yeah, sometimes you just see a play and you rewind it and you draw it up on the chalkboard and you just run it, you know? That will continue to be a part of football as an evolution, as part of college football, but I think from Montana State, what you're going to continue to see is an emphasis on ball control, right? Controlling the time of possession with your running game. It's been effective for them across the board. How do you match that defensively? Well, with the 4-2-5, you can do it multiple ways. You can bring pressure. You can create just normal, like, given pressure with the front four there. You can do some interesting things in the back end. You can kind of match and ebb and flow with the, defensively what your offense is producing and kind of where you're at. So I think offensively it'll look a little bit the same, but you do have some pieces to replace up front, which will be different. You know, you got to have a dominant offensive line. That's not news to anybody.
For sure.
But it's definitely news if you need to replace three or, you know, two, three guys that are, you know, borderline All-Americans or named All-Americans. That starts to really change how much effectively you can run the football. How much do you want Tommy Mellott to get beat up? Are they going to run a two-quarterback system? Can they even get away from it at this point?
Right.
I don't think you can. I think you probably have to run two.
No doubt.
Parts of it. I think that who's second in line right now would be Jordan Reed. Is... Yeah. He's been there for, what, now 3, going on 4 years? He's probably a redshirt junior at this point. Knows the system, can play, can throw the ball a little bit. But then just Tommy Mellott become that running quarterback, the Sean Chambers 19 touchdown guy. And then you have Jordan Reed kind of like operating a passing offense. Right. I think it'll be hard for them to get away from some of that. Even if Jordan Reed's only throwing the ball seven times in a game, I think that it's probably going to happen.
It's a good point. And when it comes to the offensive line, we'll get to that a little bit more to extrapolate it. But I will say this. Sometimes you have turnover where you haven't proven that you can replace it. The Cats have had, you know, when they had Lewis Kidd and Taylor Tuiasosopo walk out the door, they got better on the offensive line.
And they literally lost two or three of their best guys every year and replaced them with guys that weren't as good and got better.
Right. those guys become even better, right?
They do, yeah. Or
Rush Reimer became as good as you can be because he can play all the spots.
In the beginning, when that's your replacement, that was not as good.
That's what development is, though.
It is.
People
absolutely
ask, what's been the issue that's ailed the Montana offensive line? It's the inability to develop. It's
the
inability to throw guys to the wolves and have that guy be a full-on liability for half a season, then solid for half a season, and then the next year all-conference, and the next year all-American.
Yep.
Like, it's what you have to do. The Cats did it again last year where they threw Connor Moore to the wolves. They said, okay, we got an all-American left tackle in Rush Reimer. We're going to play him at left guard instead. We're going to let redshirt freshman roll. Gets eaten for lunch for a month and then becomes good, and then by the end of the year is great. Pretty dang good for a redshirt freshman. So we'll get to their offensive line. The two-quarterback system, though, is so interesting because the Cats have had a desire to run a two-quarterback system and also a necessity to run a two-quarterback system.
You have to with what they do.
Right. The two-quarterback system, ironically, worked way better when only one of the two quarterbacks was available. But they also had to have one of the two quarterbacks available at all times. Because if you don't have – when Tommy Mellott gets hurt every year, you got to have a Sean Chambers. When Sean Chambers gets hurt every year, you have to have a Tommy Mellott.
They both – if you're running what they do, if you run quarterback power ever, you have to have a backup.
That's right.
You have to.
That's right.
North Dakota State's been running quarterback power for a lot of years, and they always have had a backup.
That's right.
You have to.
Marcus Weir, who will be one of the stalwart offensive linemen for the Cats, he said on Nuanez Now earlier this spring that the number one thing that they've been working on during spring ball, he said it's been almost exclusively pass pro. They've been just working on pass pro because that's been the most fascinating part about their scheme under Taylor Housewright. The offensive line stuff has been as simple as it can get. It's block left or block right. They're literally zone blocking. And because they run RPO on every play, and because the rules are so easy to manipulate now, you can just fire off the ball.
Yeah.
Well, now they've actually been trying to build a pocket. Why is that? Because Jordan Reed is a decent athlete, but he's not Sean Chambers.
Yeah.
And so you need to be able to throw the ball down the field. I think you also need that for Mellott, though. Like, that's what Coach Marty always says. Stop calling design runs for Tommy Mellott. Because Tommy Mellott's going to figure out how to run the ball. You can have
11, 13 times.
Yeah, you can have five zone read plays where he's making a read and then maybe he keeps it. But like running empty set quarterback power with him is just so dumb. Just because if you do that 10 times and you run zone read 10 times and you throw 20 times, he's going to run 30 times and then he's going to get hurt. That's just what happens.
Yes, it is.
So, you know, maybe you take some stuff off of him there. So, I don't know. What do you think about the last question on this part? What do you think about the element, though, where when you have Chambers and Mellott, there's certainly different little nuances you can do that are because of their different skill sets, but their skill sets are largely the same. This potential two-quarterback system, assuming that Jordan Reed is the number two, these guys are vastly different. On one hand, you could say that makes you way harder to prepare for and defend. On the other hand, maybe there's less continuity just in the seamlessness of the way they were able to roll sometimes these last couple years. So what do you think about just the contrasting styles between those two guys?
I think it'll either work itself out early in the non-conference or early in the conference season, or it'll be a Tommy Mellott show. And you've heard me say this for years, Coulter, that Tommy Mellott's one of the best players we've ever covered as far as his ability. He's insane. He's an insane athlete. He's a true gamer. I mean, he's just a baller, right? I mean, there's just no two ways around it. The durability, the way he plays is just, it's going to be an issue as far as lasting a whole season. So I think that the two quarterback system, not only for Tommy's sake, but just for what they're kind of what we've called the offensive DNA, is probably smart. They are different skill sets, but it became to the point where Sean Chambers was truly just a running quarterback at some point. I mean, he had some huge games throwing the football. I mean, he threw like four touchdowns in a game. When he threw it like seven times, threw four touchdowns.
I mean,
like,
the guy was, when it was just his show, Tommy Mellott was not healthy and unavailable.
Yeah.
Sean Chambers was the National Player of the Week three times.
Absolutely.
I mean,
At some point, though, he became like a runner only. Right. I think that that in college, especially when, you know, guys who haven't, don't have a ton of miles on their body, you know, plenty of tread left on the tire, like Jordan Reed, I think that he can functionally run for 5 yards in a play that should be a Sean Chambers time a lot play. You know what I'm saying? Like, you don't have to just break 70-yard touchdowns to be the second quarterback. I think that Jordan Reed could run a little bit and find a way to, you know, throw the football more effectively than maybe either of them. And that's, you know, a little bit of, like, generalization to say that the 6'5 guy who's not quite as athletic is a better thrower. Like, I mean, that could be, not be true. Like, that could all be BS.
Yeah.
But I do think that it'll work itself out into the sense of they're going to find a way to get the ball in Tony Mellott's hands the majority of the time. But as we've seen, another reason, Coulter, that it's important is, as we've seen for what now, 5-6 years, regular season for the Cats, they're at home, they're up by 40 a decent amount. You probably want to play a second guy.
Right.
You know, like, they're rolling teams when they get going, the running game's going, playing well defensively, sunny afternoon in Bozeman, man, they're crushing some teams. So you probably want to have that second guy as far as the way that they run their offense.
At Jewelry Design Center, they can make anything you desire.
We have branded jewelry that you'll see across the world and the country. And you have full access to our full manufacturing shop. You can look in the case. You don't have to start out designing something. You can see anything that we have in the case that customize it for your personal experience.
Jewelry Design Center, now open in Missoula at 2501 Brook Street across from the Montana Club. Jewelry Design Center, your jeweler for life.
Big Sky Breakdown, SkylineSportsFT.com, presented in part by Jewelry Design Center. Jewelry Design Center, they want to be your jeweler for life, so they will certainly work with you from start to finish for any and all sort of projects or creative pursuits that you might have. Jewelry Design Center has locations throughout the Northwest, including in Missoula, 2501 Brook Street, right across from the Montana Club. Jewelry Design Center, your jeweler for life. On the Grizz side of things, we mentioned the offensive line, and I do think that on one hand, they've done a good job using a specific strategy to shore up their offensive line, and it's been good to very good at times the last couple of years, but it hasn't been close to where it needs to be. And I know we get scrutinized for this take all the time, but I know we're on the exact same page. And if you, let's say you're the Montana Grizzlies, and you, let's say last year their offensive line was like the ninth best in the country. Well, the teams you're trying to beat have the three best offensive lines in the country. And the gap between those is tremendous. It's huge. I mean, you look at those South Dakota State guys and their pro day numbers, like, that's not the same thing as what you saw the Grizz guys just do. It's just not the same stratosphere. The South Dakota State and North Dakota State has ready-made guys that are going to go start in the NFL. That's a whole different level than having good FCS offensive linemen. The Grizz have been good to really good on the offensive line. And they've done it almost exclusively with recruiting Power 5 talent to anchor things. Their one good developmental project has been Brandon Casey. That's what we're talking about, where they threw him to the Wolves, and he was pretty average for a couple of years. He was a first-team All-League guy last year. He's an honorable mention All-American. So he's at least got the proper trajectory that you want. Journey Grimsley is a guy that's come along a little bit as well. This is all to say, though, we've said this on this podcast many times. There's several different things that go into the offensive line. There's the recruitment, there's the development, there's the mentality, there's the scheme, and there's the coaching. We're going to get a prime example of changes in several of those elements because for the first time in a long time, they have a new offensive line coach. I listened to Joe Pavlik on Riley Corcoran's Inside the Den podcast. He sounded like an offensive line coach to me, but I just think that having a fresh view on things in that room is going to be a good thing for the Grizz offensive line. That said, they're going to have to find some talent now too, because they have Casey coming back. They have Journey Grimsrud and Liam Brown, who both were solid. After that, they have a lot of guys that, well, even the people that are hardcore fans that are listening to this podcast probably haven't heard of. They did bring in a transfer from Cal, who they're expecting to probably be a starter. But how much do you think just having a new voice in that room can help Montana?
It's got to be the answer. I mean, anyone that knows football knows that it starts on the lines, right? Yeah, sure. It starts on the offensive line. Let's be clear about that. You know, you need to have a good defensive line in football to compete, to set the tone, to be a real football team. But it starts on the offensive line. We talked about development, Coulter. I mean, obviously, these guys that have been in this Montana Grizz program for the last handful of 5 years since Bobby Houck's returned, there's guys that have gotten a lot better. You know, there's development that's natural. There's development that's internal. There's development that's physical. But as you mentioned, you look at some of the best, the top tier offensive lines in the FCS, and Montana has not been there yet in the last handful of years. And that's what they hung their hat on in Bobby Hug's first tenure, which we always talk about that, right? The past is the past. Move on, right? Like, things have changed. Different program, different team. Yeah, sure, but we're talking about football. You got to be dominant up front if you want to have a chance. Yeah, you can make, you can get a magician to be in the at quarterback. You can get dynamic players at running back and good receivers on the edge, and you can cover up for a lot of stuff. But there's no way that you're going to go and flat out win a natty, as we saw this last January in Frisco, without a really good developed offensive line. So was a change needed there? A change is good for everybody. It's probably good for the past coaches, probably good for future coaches, probably good for past and future players. Who they bring in will matter significantly. It's not necessarily a get a drop down, they've been at Cal, things are fine. You have to develop guys. You have to have guys take the next step. Maybe that's schematically to help them out, but overall it's a mentality. It has to start up front. It hasn't been that way for Montana. How do they find a way to do that? I think it's probably a new voice.
Thanks for the breakdown. Scott at SportsMT.com, presented in part by Old Works Golf Course. Golf season is underway. Thank goodness it is. Old Works, one of the great tracks in the Northwest. It's a Jack Nicklaus course, one of the most unique places you'll play, with all the black sand filled with the slag. And, I mean, when the wind's blowing, man, it's about as long as you can find anywhere in the Pacific Northwest. Certainly worth the trip, no matter if you're in Bozeman, Missoula, anywhere in Montana, or anywhere outside of the Big Sky State as well. Old Works Golf Course in Anaconda. Visit playoldworks.com for more information. We talked a little bit about the Cat offensive line, and Rush Reimer transferring to Cal, Omar Abedion transferring to Baylor. Certainly big losses, but when you get – that's the thing about this offensive line development conversation that we're having, though, right? When you get it churning, it becomes a machine. So the Cats, okay, they lose these two talented guys to the Power Five, but they have so many guys within their program already. You get JT Reed back. He was a starter and an all Big Sky guy at guard last year. Cole Sain was a starter 2 years ago as well before missing last year with an injury. He's going to be a senior. So he's a guy that can play at least a relatively high level, he's proven, and his next step is at a really high level. You got Justice Perkins in the middle as a fourth-year starter. You got Connor Moore coming back as your left tackle. And then you got the best of all of them in Marcus Weir. He's another great example. He goes down midway through the year 2 years ago. That opens the door for then guys like Jacob Kettles and Titan Fleischman to sort of rise up. So the Cats have had eight really good offensive linemen for a long time, basically. And that's where this development, it just becomes like a machine. So I don't think they're going to really miss a beat, even though those guys are really good players. They also have some other good, pretty dang good players that are all, several of them who are proven good players to plug into those spots.
Yeah, I mean, and schematically, they've been doing a lot of the same stuff for quite a few years now, even just mentality-wise. And that's where maybe something that, as Montana, the Grizz start to settle more into like an offensive identity, really got things rolling throughout the second half of last year, that starts to become a little easier for the offensive line to not only develop, but just retain and grow. So when you talk about Montana State, Colt, they're, some of those consistencies I really do think help foster that kind of developmental environment, as well as really good coaching. You know, they've had good offensive line coaching for the better part of 15, 20 years. You know, I mean, you look at guys that have moved on to the Power Five that have been wildly successful with those programs. It really built a culture there of whatever you want to call it. Every offensive line culture calls it something different, but Montana State has had that for quite a long time. So like I keep saying, it starts up front. We'll see if they can continue to be consistent with their offensive identity, because if not, that's where you see changes happen. That's where you see offensive lines maybe not develop the same rate and take a step back even. That's where it'll be so interesting to see what Montana State wants to do offensively. We probably won't know that till midway through August, kind of what their identity is going to try to be. Every coach says, oh, well, starts running the football. It's like, yeah, sure. But what is the actual identity of where we want to get to play 30, not our first 10 scripted plays? How are we going to wear teams down? Where do I go and how do I do it? We talk about Montana State rolling off the football. You know, you do that 70 times a game, you have a pretty high level of consistency.
Right.
You know what you're doing, block left, block right kind of thing. smash people. If that becomes more complicated, can he develop at the same rate? I think that's probably the thing to watch the most.
There's several other things I wrote down, but I know we're already we've already been rolling for a little while, and some of this other stuff we'll get to maybe on later on this week or next week as well. Big Sky Breakdown presented by Holloway and Hulling Law, your advocates for justice. At Holloway and Hulling, the firm combines their passion for justice with a deep understanding of Montana law. With over 25 years of experience, the team offers expert legal representation in criminal defense, personal injury, and family law. Holloway and Hulling are not just lawyers. They are your advocates in the courtroom and beyond, and they're a team of legal professionals united by one common goal, to provide exceptional legal representation.
I've been practicing law for over 12 years. I started my career in the United States Marine Corps. I was in the Marine Corps from 2009 to 2017 and started practicing law in the Marine Corps in 2012 as a prosecutor. As a prosecutor, I handled just about every type of case you can imagine, from simple misdemeanors to special victims cases, violent assaults, you name it, I handled it. And then in 2017, when I discharged from the Marine Corps, I moved to Montana, first in Stevensville, then eventually up here in Missoula. And I began practicing primarily criminal defense and then some personal injury.
I want to ask you about a couple more things about the coordinator changes, because this is as many new coordinators as we've seen in the state of Montana. New coordinators for both offense and defense at Montana State, and new defensive coordinators, plural, at Montana. Last year, the Grizz defense, I think you could, if you were really, really studying it, the things that changed between the sort of base stuff that they were running under Kent Bear for several years and then what it became under Ronnie Bradford mostly was in the secondary. Like, you could tell you had an NFL guy coaching the team and implementing all sorts of combo stuff on the back end. Both Ronnie Bradford and Tim Houck deserve a ton of credit for that. Now Tim Houck's the co-defensive coordinator. Sources say Roger Cooper will be the primary play caller, and then Tim Houck will be sort of the second, but he'll be the primary probably game planner. Houck will be. Yeah, so that maybe it's sort of just like a fail-safe plan there. But I guess two parts of the question. What do you think of the fact that the Grizz will have two defensive coordinators, and what's the next evolution of the defense? Because Kent Barrett was, you know, A-gap blitzes until your fingers fall off. I mean, just button smashing, engage eight all day long. And last year, they have to bring pressure because they play a three-man front. So they're always going to bring one or two.
You got to.
But it was not nearly as many blitzes. It was more confusing quarterbacks. And, I mean, their opponent quarterback rating was negligible last year, right? So what's the next step evolutionarily? And then what do you think of just dual coordinators for Montana?
Well, for anyone who's a loyal listener, you'll know that you, Coulter, have had a take for the last decade or so that the youth of today have changed, right? They things evolve and people need different things. And I want to just let everyone know that adults in that same time span have changed in a very similar way. People need to be catered to. They need to feel good about themselves. They need to have titles. I work in a couple organizations that feel that exact same way. Co-defensive coordinators is pretty much just like on offense, you have an offensive coordinator, a run game coordinator, a pass game coordinator. On defense, you have all the same things. It's pretty much identifying to the public and internally to your team who goes to what meeting room.
Right.
We all have a pretty equal say.
I've never seen co-defensive coordinators. There's a defensive coordinator and then the co-defensive coordinator. Right.
Absolutely.
He's the second coordinator.
Absolutely.
Pete Kukowski is the defensive coordinator at Texas, was. At least Jeff Choate was the co-defensive coordinator.
Absolutely.
Montana State, Bobby Daly is the defensive coordinator. Sean Howe is the co-defensive coordinator.
Yep. Making people feel good about themselves. It makes it justify to the athletic department why you're sending two guys to Texas, or one guy to Texas, one guy to Florida to recruit. There are defensive coordinators. We got to.
Right.
It starts to.
And how you pay them, too.
And how you pay them, and how you give them a voice in said room or a bigger room, whether it's a broken off one or you know, all team. It gives people an identity to be able to say, here's who I am and what my role is. As you mentioned, I think that just gives Tim Houck, as well as the defense, identity to have a voice in game planning and a voice in adjustments, right? Roger Cooper will be X's and O's and dropping down the lingo, dropping down the hand signals, however you want to talk about like the implementation of said system. I still think that people need to have identity. I'm not saying that it's a bad thing. It's probably for the best. I don't think Kent Bear would have allowed a co-defensive coordinator. That's just my opinion. I don't know how that all works, but I think the addition of Tim Houken to a more full-time role, not that he wasn't full-time, but a more like permanent role, if you will, I think that there's not a person in the world that wouldn't say it's a good idea.
Well, right.
It's probably a good idea.
That's the thing is, like, last year, Tim Houken, he can fully prepare the entire defensive game plan for you as the defensive analyst, but he actually technically can't coach the players on the field.
During the game,
yeah. That's why you make him a coach of some sort because, I mean, the guy's got a Super Bowl ring. I mean, he's one of the great defensive backs coaches in the world. I mean, all of those great safeties that came up through Montana, they all, at least early on, had Tim Houken as their influence. I mean, he's who created Colt Anderson and Chan Schillinger. These guys played for Tim Houken. So just getting him to coach players, that's the one thing is, like, you look at, okay, who do the Grizz lose? They lose Nash Vouch and Garrett Graves and Trajan Cotton all from their safety room. They return Ryder Meyer, who had a really good year last year. But, like, if Tim Houken has any say in it, the Grizz are just going to be lights out at safety. Like, that's just going to be a fact.
Yeah, I 100% agree.
Yeah.
And there's, I think it's probably a little bit of convincing him, too. I mean, I think he probably is in a stage of his life where he could retire or, you know, not do this. But the buy-in, the opportunity that he probably sees, I think it's obviously a reflection of where the program's at, where the team and the talent's at. And it's a huge opportunity. I mean, again, I don't think that having co-coordinators is necessarily the wrong thing, especially as you start to communicate through what the responsibilities are. And you look to Roger Cooper for everything on game day, you know, but to have Tim Houken on the sideline or up in the box as a second voice and as a huge influence, I mean, you got to think that that moves the needle. I mean, you probably take a step forward.
Join Town Pump's Pump It Up Rewards Plus program and never pay full price for fuel again.
Save 5 cents on every gallon every day at any Town Pump across Montana.
Plus, earn and redeem points on your favorite in-store items to get free stuff with our clubs.
Stop in and pick up a rewards card. Download the Pump It Up Rewards Plus app today.
Or visit townpump.com/rewards to register and start saving.
Right down the road. Pump it up. Oh, yeah.
Okay, I had a whole bunch of other stuff on here, but we'll get to some of this other stuff on Big Sky Breakdowns later on this week with Andrew Houten, as well as On Nuanez Now. I have two more questions for you. Here's a good one. This is actually harder than I thought it was going to be. Who is harder to replace when it comes to respective sides of this rivalry? Who's harder to replace, Clifton McDowell or Sean Chambers?
Wow. Man, oh, man. I mean, it's got to be Chambers.
Wow.
Just because of the unique skill set. I think that there are quarterbacks out there that play like Clifton McDowell.
There are?
How would you describe how he plays?
Slow.
He hits open receivers. I think there's quarterbacks that do that.
He hits open receivers. That's right.
Yeah, I think there's quarterbacks that do that.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't think that.
How would I describe how Clifton McDowell plays? I'd use the words tough, slow.
Let's call it methodical.
Methodical, sure. Yeah, that's good.
I would tough, say methodical. Slow.
Hanging by a thread until he's not.
What happens after that?
He just had such a polarizing year last year. If you just watch the game against the Cats, you're like, that guy's the best quarterback in the conference. If you just watch the games in the playoffs, you're like, how is Montana's quarterback that bad?
Yeah.
It's wild. I know a lot of people are screaming at their podcast player right now because I think that the quarterback thing in Montana is the most polarizing thing because there's nobody that roots for the Grizz that thinks Tommy Mellott or Sean Chambers are worth a shit at all, which is false.
That's hilarious.
There's also nobody that roots for the Cats that thinks that anything the Grizz have done at quarterback in 15 years is any good. So it's pretty funny because nobody can evaluate the easiest position to evaluate in sports properly because of the color of the glasses that they wear to observe it.
Sure.
It's amazing. Like, I couldn't believe when people, I got so many texts from Grizz people. They're like, why is Sean Chambers doing pro day? And I was like, what do you mean? He's 6'3", 240, throws the piss out of it, and can run. Like, is he an NFL quarterback? No, he's not even in the same realm of conversation. He's not even close to an NFL quarterback. But I thought going into his pro day, he might have a chance to prove himself as an NFL athlete. That didn't come to fruition. He didn't run very well. He didn't jump very well. But it's not crazy that he worked out for NFL scouts. And so, anyways.
You said, wow.
I mean,
how many guys in the country can score a 70-yard touchdown? It's like less than 30,
yeah,
probably.
Right. I agree.
He could do it at any time. Again, Clifton McDowell, I think that there's quarterbacks out there that maybe not like him, but can produce the exact same results.
I know. The thing that is the like the other side of the coin for Clifton McDowell is, and I know I've been critical of him just in his specific skill set, but the other side of the coin is that for the way that Bobby Houck wants to play football games and the style he wants to play and the way that he demands to be the maestro of all of it, Clifton McDowell is the absolute perfect quarterback for Bobby Houck. That's why they won 11 straight games with him as the starter.
Wow.
Perfect. He wants you to not be that good. 10 of 17 for 191 yards and just hit the open receivers when I say do it and be able to just not turn the ball over and punt so we can get half the field and then we can win the game by our sideline punt return. That's what they want.
Yeah, maybe that stat line, but I don't think he wants the broken pocket heater to the ground. Like
no,
the
he
ground
does not.
Ball.
No, he does not.
I don't think he wants that.
No, he does not. But if he had a quarterback that went 22 for 30 for 330 yards and four touchdowns, he'd melt down.
Well, it's about to happen. So,
like, could they even fathom accepting that? They used to be able to do it when they had Dalton Snead because they didn't have anybody that could stop. They couldn't. They weren't nearly as good on defense, and their special teams was half as good as
it's true. It's true. Play into your strengths.
He wants – first of all, the number one way he wants to beat you is 35-0. But the second best way he wants
– special teams.
But the second best way he wants to beat you is beating you by 10, where the definitive factors are a 47-yard field goal and a 60-yard sideline punt return.
Yeah, definitely.
My maestro – we get to this point in the game so we can run this punt return so we can win because special teams.
Hey, man, it works.
I mean, they went to the national championship game last year. It absolutely works.
Because of that.
I just think that if you can't figure out a way to accept that the quarterback is a, if not the, essential factor for you winning the entire thing, if you can't accept that, then you must have Clifton McDowell.
Yeah, a little bit irreverent, a little bit. You've always talked about, like, you know, Cole Berquist being not only maybe the most underrated, but the star of the quarterback room in the last 15, 20 years, you know, outside of like Jordan Johnson's run was insane. Like, let's not sleep on that.
Yeah,
right?
Jordan Johnson was sweet. But he just went through, there was just so much tumult during that time, both his individual and also just multiple coaching changes.
Was there?
just a tiny
oh
bit.
Okay, I remember that vaguely. The Cole Berquist thing was that always that he pushed back when Bobby tried to squash the quarterback bravado, and that Burke just pushed through it and forced his way into that position that I'm gonna chuck it downfield, you can't stop me, I'm gonna throw it to Marky Mark on the sideline, we're gonna go for it, you know, like. So Clifton McDowell had a touch of that, of like, what'd you call? I don't really care. I'm gonna kind of chuck it here or there.
Yeah.
And when he was hot, he's good. You know, he played with house money sometimes. When he ran the football, he looked, you know, he was a tank too. He was hard to stop. I was surprised he didn't run it more in the playoffs. That's here nor there. I mean, Sean Chambers is a first-team all-league player. Like, I think probably harder to replace someone with that skill set.
Scored like 40 touchdowns the last 2 years.
Scored like 40 touchdowns. It's like second or third most in Montana State history.
Yeah.
I think it's probably closer than maybe we want to make it seem, but I'd probably answer with that.
Yeah, it's funny because I can just envision the Grizz people that are screaming right now because last year Chambers was getting completely misused by the time the rivalry game rolled around in Missoula. He was also completely hurt. And so, like, what?
Well, the whole thing kind of fell apart.
That's right. Yeah. The whole thing fell apart. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. That's what happens when you have off the field distractions that then manifest themselves into on the field issues. Like, that's how it happens.
That's what happens when you have 7 quarterbacks and 10 coordinators. You know, things start to fall apart.
Yeah, for
just
sure.
Give the ball to the guy. Who's the guy? Give him the ball. That's the answer.
Man, it's a really interesting question because I think that because McDowell fits what Bobby Houck wants to do, he is hard to replace just because of what Bobby desires the most. But maybe they get Ayat to be that guy. I'm not sure.
You know who would be the best guy to replace McDowell?
Who's that?
Clifton McDowell. As a walk-on.
Yeah, right. Chambers is going to be definitely hard to replace, for sure.
I just, you know, Colter, when I always talk about staring down the barrel on the sideline, taking photos, I get to see contact, you know, meets head-to-head in the hole from 10, 15 yards away. And there's guys, it's just different. Like, everyone's different. You know, the Grizz linebackers are insanely fun to watch, but they'll meet their match at times where you hear guys where it's like this mutual pop in the hole where, like, both brains are exploding. And Sean Chambers is really unique. Like, the pop that people would go to put on him and where his momentum would take him through that tackle. I mean, I'm not going to say I've never seen it, but, like, it's really unique. What I'm trying to get at is he absolutely trucked people. Like,
yes.
For like 14 of the 23 games he ever played, he was absolutely dominant. This is pretty rare, you know, pretty, like you said, he started like five games, was like the national player of the week, like three times.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty good.
Join Town Pump's Pump It Up Rewards Plus program and never pay full price for fuel again.
Save 5 cents on every gallon every day at any Town Pump across Montana.
Plus, earn and redeem points on your favorite in-store items to get free stuff with our clubs.
Stop in and pick up a rewards card. Download the Pump It Up Rewards Plus app today.
Or visit townpump.com/rewards to register and start saving.
All right, last thing, Big Sky Breakdown, SkySportsMT.com. Presented in part by Town Pump. Town Pump got us all over the place, from Moscow, Idaho, three different times during football season, down to the Grand Canyon and back with a stop in St. George, Utah. Went to Sacramento, went to the national championship game in Frisco. We went to the Big Sky Tournament in Boise, Idaho. All of it, couldn't have done it without Town Pump. Brawl the Wild by the Mile, back for yet another year at both Skyline Sports as well as ESPN MT. Appreciate Town Pump, Montana's best for more than six decades. And I know that you can't make it to either of the spring games, but hypothetically, if you could, or when you watch it back, either the broadcast, what are you going to be watching for? Like, what sort of progress do you want to see out of both sides? Or are we going to even see anything? Because that's just what spring games have become.
I think we'll talk about it down the road too, Colter, on this podcast, but I'm just super interested in both secondaries. I think that both have a chance to be extremely impactful for Montana and Montana State. I think they're stacked full of talent. I love guys on both sides of the divide there in those position groups. I mean, I love to see kind of what the pecking order is, to knowing that going into summer, what they come out of summer looking like, and then how that pecking order shakes itself out, because it's always been the most interesting group for me, as far as, especially because you can recruit guys in Montana. You can recruit local guys that fit that body type, fit that model. Yeah, there's linebacker play in Montana as well, but a good Montana safety, there's really nothing like it. It gets the crowd going. It gets the kids going. It gets the program going. You know, there's been some good in-state corners as of late and some regional guys that have been, you know, really good players. But as far as we talked about at the top, Colt, there about position battles, you talk about quarterback battles, you talk about different position groups, there's nothing, it's not even close, that's more competitive than the defensive back room. Because you can go from nothing to somebody and be a starter.
That's right.
In a couple practices.
That's right.
You can do it in a week.
And you can do it if you're young.
You can do it as a freshman. You can do it as a senior. You can do it as a walk-on. You can do it as a small guy, a fast guy, a big guy. It doesn't really matter. It's insanely competitive because the proof's in the pudding. You know, there is just, you're going to get balls caught on you. You're going to get trucked in the hole, and you still, how do you overcome that? How do you survive that? And how do you make plays through that? I mean, it can change an entire program, but it can change that entire defense. So I love, you know, looking at both those groups, obviously something that I have a little bit more experience in, but also I just love the talent that both the teams have there.
I agree. And I think that's going to be one of the things that really, Montana State last year defensively was average.
Yeah.
They
were good in the secondary.
They were good at all three levels. That's the part that's perplexing, is they have one of the best defensive lines in the country. They had good linebackers led by one of the best guys in the conference in Nolan Askelson, and they have talent in spades in the secondary. They just had this gaping, They never had any continuity in the secondary because they played like five corners and they were always mixing and matching who was playing with who. And it seemed as if, especially for a lot of the younger guys, their number one priority was winning their spot every week instead of executing what they needed to do defensively.
Sure.
I also think like at safety, I think Ryland, this is sort of a tangent, but I think with the way that they play defense, when they just run the two inside linebackers, they need to have – Lavelle Price is a great cover guy at nickel. He's also 5'7", 170 pounds.
Man, that guy played so far above his head his whole career.
I mean, would you see his pro day numbers, though, bro? He ran 4.48. He did more reps on the bench than Braxton Hill. How's that happen?
Yeah.
I mean,
baller.
I'm feeling pretty good about myself. I'm Lavelle Price, and I'm like, yeah, I gave it a shot. I ran 4.48 and had a 10.2 broad jump and did 18 reps at 168 pounds in front of the NFL scouts.
Is he really weighed 168?
I think 170-something, but yeah, not 180.
Jeez, man.
Not 180, 18 reps.
Oh, buddy.
I mean, he had all the best marks on pro day pretty much.
Besides
Askelson. Regardless, when the defense works the best is, and you're not going to have Ty Okada every year. Ty Okada is a special player.
You like it with Ty Okada and Colt Anderson on the flank? Things are going well.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But I do think that playing a bigger body there.
Yeah, sure.
Is Ryland Ort should be the nickel guy. He's good. He's a good strong safety. But right. I think
he does not need to get audible or adjusted into the deep third. There's no reason.
That's
to.
Right.
Yeah.
And when he's strong, a lot of times they can get him caught in the box and then he's out of the play.
Sure.
Or he's so aggressive in the box, but then if you get him in space, then he's better in short space if you can just put who he's got in front of him.
Give him the sideline.
Very much like the Trajan Cotton rule at Montana last year, right?
Sure.
Cotton's not guarding anything over the top of his head. He's just keeping it in front of him. He's tackling, setting the edge. So I don't know. That's just going to be an interesting part to see. But I just think that increased continuity in the secondary and all combined with elevated performance. Guys like Simeon Woodard and Miles Jackson and Andrew Powderl, these guys have all been, oh man, that guy's going to be really good. Well, now you got to be good. Because if you're Woodard, you're a senior. And if you're Jackson, you're a junior. You're going to be really good. Was a big time recruit. It doesn't matter anymore. You got to be good now. Woodard was great as a freshman. And he's been pretty good. Last couple of years, been banged up a bunch. But they just got to have him become an all-league guy. They need Powderl to become an all-league type of guy. That could help up everything, because if you can actually cover consistently on the back end and you have some continuity within the scheme, now all of a sudden, Brody Grebe and Kenneth Iden are going nuts. So, I agree with you. I think the secondary is going to be big time to watch, and that's going to go hand-in-hand within, of course, watching the quarterbacks as well. Tommy Blatt's probably not going to get a ton of run. In the Sunny Hollow spring game, all the Grizz quarterbacks are absolutely going to get a ton of run. That's going to be interesting and fun to watch, and I can't wait to see what everybody after Blatt has to offer as well. Jordan Reed, we've known about his talent. Chance Wilson and Pat Duchesne, I hear they're battling it out for that third spot. So a lot of fun. It'll be fun to watch and fun to analyze. Brooks Duanas here on the Big Sky Breakdown, SkylineSportsMT.com. Thanks to all of our awesome sponsors, including Town Pump, Holloway and Hulling Law, the Jewelry Design Center, and Old Works Golf Course. Anything left to add before I get you out of here?
No, it's still football season.
There's no such thing as an off season. So funny. We will be back with more Big Sky Breakdowns a little later on this week. Also, be sure to tune in to Nuanez Now all week on 102.9 ESPN Radio around Western Montana, SWX Montana Television, the ESPN MT app, or Nuanez Now on your various podcast hosting platforms. We'll have Nuanez Now live from Washington Grizzly Stadium leading up to the spring game on Friday. And also looking to maybe do Nuanez Now live from Bozeman the following Friday as well. So stay tuned for that. In the meantime, thanks so much for listening. Skyline Sports, every day, every season. Have yourself a wonderful week and be good.
Jewelry Design Center is not your average jewelry store. The friendly, welcoming staff is so excited to be in Montana, and the craftsmanship, unique creativity, care, and artisanship you'll receive is second to none. Is there anything you guys can't do?
We don't cut diamonds.
Okay, yeah.
But we can facilitate that.
Right.
It's unique that we cast our own metal, we grow our own models, we hand carve, as well as use computer-aided technology to design. We're pushing the limits of what we had previously thought was impossible.
Jewelry Design Center, your jeweler for life.